Welcome to Peer Pressure. Today's guest is Ralphie G. of the New York hardcore band The Mob. You'll hear him talk about the history of New York hardcore, delaying a Dickies show, and he will also extol the virtues of short songs, all on today's podcast. Thanks to Lita Martinez for editing the podcast and to Liz Berg for all the other behind-the-scenes work. Stay tuned. I would like to welcome Ralphie G. of The Mob.
Thanks, Diane. Glad to be here. Sounds like you've been ripping the roof off your listeners, wherever residence or vehicle that they happen to be in. And I was glad to hear Nation on Fire when I walked in.
Yeah, so tell me about Nation on Fire. You're here and all the promo that I've done is Ben Ralphie, the vocalist of The Mob. But who's on that record?
Well, some friends from Philadelphia. For those of you who don't know, I've been really an adopted resident of Philadelphia for the last 20 years. And very early on in my time out there, I just got involved with the whole scene that was happening there and met a lot of musicians that were into the same things I was. And we formed Nation on Fire and started playing with all the bands that were playing around the Philadelphia area. So a lot of good people. I've been in touch with them all along, and we may even hear some new things from Nation on Fire sometime in the future.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Shout out to all my Center City, Philadelphia people.
So active as you have been, I want to get a timeline from you for the listeners, just to sort of establish where we're at. Can you give me like a timeline for The Mob?
Timeline from the beginning?
Yes.
Oh, man. Yes. It's going way back.
Well, but that's why you're here.
Well, I think one thing that's really cool about The Mob is that the members of The Mob really didn't form as a band at first. We were childhood friends, met in school and Little League and that kind of thing. So with The Mob, without The Mob, we've stayed, you know, together as a family all throughout time. And even when we weren't active, we were still active in the family. So, you know, it's very easy for us to come and go and continue playing music and that sort of thing. But I would say timeline-wise, around 1980, we actually started playing. And we had a couple of little different lineups then, even though Jose, Jack Flanagan, and myself were the nucleus of the band. We weren't all ready to actually play music at that time, so we picked up with a couple other musicians and started playing, you know, punk rock type music, stuff that was happening at the time in New York City. Bands like Heart Attack, Kraut, Reagan Youth, and so forth were part of the scene, and you know, we adapted to that scene really well. It was what we loved, coming from, you know, the history of rock and roll in New York City and that sort of thing, Kiss and the Dolls and Giant Thunders and the Ramones and so forth. We were just really a continuation of that. You know, around later in 81, the Bad Brains really started to make a big splash there, and they brought this whole new sound into New York, which was the more aggressive, what later became the hardcore sound, not based on what they were doing solely, but what the country was doing. And so we really loved that because bands were progressing, you know, towards that. And so we really heard something in that really drived us to create a little more of an extreme sound with a little more velocity and lyrics based upon what was happening at the times in New York City. So that's where we got our start. We continued to play, put out some records, as you know. I think, you know, following the DC format of multiple songs on a 45, we love that whole idea with the SOA and the Minor Threat and the Teen Idol type style. And we did the same thing with Upset the System. And we did it all ourselves on our own label, that sort of thing. And just continued to play out, mostly in New York City. CBGB's, A7, 171, wherever we could play. And word got out, word spread, and then the visiting bands would have have us play with them, or we'd have visiting bands from other areas play with us, and it, you know, the community started to form, and that really was the basis for what was to become the younger version of the New York punk scene, which moved into more of a hardcore type phrase or concept and so forth. After that, we continued to progress as a band and mature as individuals, and put out the Step Forward EP, which was a little more, I would say, sophisticated in its approach to the music that we were doing. And really, we were just progressing and maturing as musicians, which came to be on the final release of the LP, We Come to Crush. So then that was done in, I believe, released in about 86. So for those, 5 years or so, we were really, just the hardest working act in New York hardcore, and just pumping out anything we can and progressing musically and, spreading out and doing a couple of tours here and there, and just enjoying ourselves and enjoying this new music that was erupting at the time.
And so I just want to go back to the first two 7-inches. They were put out in 1982 and 1983.
Yes.
Yeah, just to sort of establish that as a timeline, because a lot of people think of New York hardcore as a little bit later than that. So I just want to call attention to how early that was.
Yes.
And the fact that you kind of kick-started things for many other bands.
We helped a lot of bands out with shows. One band in particular that we had the opportunity and the pleasure to release was the Urban Waste 7-inch also on Mob Style Records. And that's, considered a classic these days. And I think we're going to play a tune from that later on. Anytime we could help bands with gigs, and it was a scene, a definite scene at the time, and a tight-knit scene, and like any other scene or family, there was the issues and problems and situations and so forth, but for the most part we stuck together as a New York United.
That's awesome. And can you say a little bit about actually putting out your own records? Because although you said that your appreciation came from your appreciation of the punk scene came from other New York acts and sort of bigger things. I mean, for the most part, punk was on major labels up until then, and so DIY sort of started, or you could say that there was a large reason to start putting out your own records then.
Yeah, well, it was obvious that no one wanted to touch the initial acts that were
did
doing.
Did you even try?
I can't even remember. I'm sure we did. We sent out demo tapes the same way any other band starting up would do that. But I don't know if your listeners or you remember. I'm sure you do. But most of the press that was wrapped around slam dancing and this and that was negative press.
Oh yeah.
So no one
so
was gonna.
Quincy.
It didn't quite work like the UK punk rock thing where the negative press generated good things and big contracts and that sort of thing. Not that
right.
We were even looking for that. We were just looking to get our music out. And, we really, like I said, saw what DC did, yet we didn't get any help from, we didn't communicate with them too much. It was all new for us. So we really did every bit of it, each and every step of it, on our own. And we learned every step of the way. The first Upset the Systems, for those who have those were printed out at a printer on large sheets, and we cut the covers out and folded them and pasted them in my backyard and inserted them ourselves. I made the lyric sheets on the Xerox printer at the place I was working at the time. So, this was really, do-it-yourself type stuff. And then we found, mechanisms that were out there that we didn't know about at first to, cut some corners and give it a little more professional look, which you saw a little bit of an upgrade in the look and feel of Step Forward, mm-hmm. and we continued on from there.
I think that was probably the first time I was really conscious of DIY stuff. I mean, in that scene, what was the process? Just sort of going through and experimenting, and contacting record plants and all that. Like, at what point did you just decide, well, we're going to put this out, or we have to, or what was going on?
We always had the idea that we would do it on our own. We saw other bands with singles out there, and it wasn't hard to find the manufacturers. We didn't use the internet, of course. We used the Yellow Pages, but they were there, and we were able to find them. We didn't know the order of steps that we should take or anything like that, but it was a haphazard affair that worked out pretty well. Just a lot of labor and love involved in that sort of thing, and just you learn as you go. And we did. It's funny because today, with all the technology and so forth, I think bands that are facing those same things that we did back then have so much exposure to great things and easy access to things that we never did back then. And I think they should pursue these independent situations and do-it-yourself type situations in the way they want to do it. And it gives them the ability to have total control over everything, which is another thing that we loved about it.
Absolutely.
Probably one of the hardest things was once we got it together, we had a product and we have 2,000 of them sitting there. It was like, what do we do with them now? That was probably the hardest thing to overcome is how do we get these out there to the stores? But actually, that fell into place too.
And what did you do? I mean, if you didn't tour, did you do mail order like the back of Maxim Rock and Roll and that kind of thing, or what was?
So much of that. We dealt directly with record stores, mm-hmm. And then also there were a couple of independent distributors. And actually, it's amazing how that worked out, because some of these distributors were dealing worldwide. So our record wound up in Germany and England and Japan and you know, all over the world, based upon some of these do-it-yourself type distributors that were facing the same things we were, mm-hmm. but were pursuing, you know, their craft just like we were.
Right.
And, you know, they handled it for us. We didn't always get paid, but, you know, that was another thing. That was the other step, trying to collect from these independent distributors. So it was just an ongoing process of trial and error.
Well, and then going back to the question of getting paid, was that a reason why you wanted to put out multiple records on Mob Style label? Because then it's like you would get paid if you had another product to give to the distributors, or was that not part of the process?
Well, that was part. You know, it didn't really come into play.
Mm-hmm.
We did everything we could. Played, you know, multiple shows as aggressive as we did, because we just wanted to put out product.
Mm-hmm.
The goal was to get the music out there, and we really didn't think about the money coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a given that we were going to produce our product, get it out there, and see what happens.
So it was playing full out, and it was not a chess game.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Very good. Stay tuned. My guest is Ralphie G from The Mob, and we will be back shortly. We have returned. My guest is Ralphie G of The Mob, and he is programming today's show, so we need to talk about what we just heard.
Well, oh man, Kiss, Black Sabbath, and Ted Nugent, awesome stuff, and brought back so many memories of growing up in Jackson Heights, and, you know, there's hundreds of other bands that we were listening to at the time, but it kind of reminds me about something that, you know, that was all hitting the you know, the arenas and the stadiums and so forth, but at the same time what was going on was the Ramones were playing everywhere across New York City and the country, and the thing was exploding in England and so forth with the Sex Pistols and all the punk bands. So, you know, I was paying close attention to all that at the time, but enjoying, you know, the great American rock and roll that was happening also. I hadn't heard Into the Void in probably 20 years, and that was awesome.
Mm.
I saw all of those bands numerous times, along with, you know, so many others, and what I had said right before they came on, and I think it's, you know, was very obvious in the Mob style of playing, is that they had a heavy influence on us as well as all the other things that were happening around us, and we still continue that today. And you know, the visuals of a lot of these bands at the time were just something spectacular to see, and being like, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old and seeing this happening was just an awesome experience. And you know, I really enjoyed that time of what was happening in music.
And since you did really experience the big rock thing, did you have any aspirations of actually doing that on that kind of level?
No, I could never dream of. I don't, you know, I guess everyone, you know, maybe when they are truly dreaming, can have aspirations of that type of thing. But you know, I never really thought about that. It was just, you know, I was glad to just be a part of the audience and part of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I didn't really, you know, think about that too much. So yeah, I guess the answer is no. But hey, you never know, right?
well, and then, so we can handily segue into what is The Mob doing now?
Well, we got lots happening, and it's very exciting. And most importantly, what's happening is the guys are in the room, and we've been jamming out and playing the old songs, you know, recreating some new riffs, and coming up with some new ideas. But most importantly, We're together in the same room and playing music. And that all was sparked by a little project that we want to work on. Actually, it's probably our biggest project to date, which is going to be a large release, which is multifaceted. And it's going to have all the old vinyl. It's going to have odds and ends and new music and, you know, those rarities and so forth. And then also we're going to finish that project off with a documentary film. It'll have some live footage from way back in the day that, you know, no one has ever seen. And some interviews with the band and people that were part of the scene at the time. And also just really a discussion on what was happening in New York City, not just in the music, but as a as an entity and as a time. And so we're real excited about that. And obviously, with all that happening, we've definitely got some shows planned to bust out in Mosh and Mob style once again. The most important thing with that is, though, we want to bring people back to, you know, 84. And that's why we get offered a lot of shows here and there, but we want to kind of do it on our own terms when we're ready and we know we can, you know, give it our all and leave the stage feeling like we left it all out there. So that'll be fun.
And so this release, you're talking about like a multiple, you said multifaceted, so a CD and a DVD?
Yes, we've been talking about a lot of different things there. Mm-hmm. It's most likely going to have to be a 2-CD set with a DVD also. So
oh, wow.
3-disc set, yeah. Wow. We'll package it nicely and give some people some things they haven't seen from the mob before. Yeah, it's a lot of work, but especially in the documentary.
Very good. So you're still working hard?
We are.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I'm excited awesome. About that.
And has the mob changed lineups at all?
Well, in the history of the mob has changed lineups a couple of times. But the greatest thing is that we are a 5-piece unit today. And the 5-piece unit is quite unusual in that there was a time from 81 to 84 where we basically had the lineup of Jack Flanagan, Jose Gonzalez, and Jamie Shanahan and myself. And then Jose left to join the HR band, and he was a part of putting out that first record, which is a wonderful record. Mm-hmm. And Chris Hackett joined up. Actually, the plan was, and this is what's interesting about it, because it's finally come to full circle here, is that we had Chris on standby to play second guitar in the band. And so we wanted to be a 5-piece way back in 85. And when Jose left, it was a little unexpected and so forth. Chris was able to really just slot himself right in, being a guitar player and knowing the songs and that sort of thing. But in between there, there was a short period of time where Kenny Ahrens, who is the singer of Urban Waste, also played bass with us. And that was a fun time. We toured with Kenny and had a blast out there. Chris had to slot himself into the bass role. And we continued on with that for another 5 or 6 years. No one really knew that Jose had left because at the time they both had this heavy Rasta look going on and they looked like twins. So no one really even knew that Chris took over for Jose. And it's interesting in that the new and improved situation is just a throwback to an idea we had way back in 1984, which is the full lineup, including Jose and Chris together. And Chris has finally gotten his dream there to play guitar in the mob rather than what he was forced into doing, playing bass.
So you're a 5-piece now with the 5 people that you thought you would be 5 with in 1984.
You got it.
That's pretty awesome.
It is awesome, and we love it.
So that's going to be that. So that is the mob solid lineup. But so you didn't really have a lot of people in and out of the band, and that, I mean, you really had like the core group with, you know, one or two speed bumps.
There was a couple of speed bumps, yeah. But after, I guess it's like 30 years now, we are still sitting with the same lineup, and that's the only one that we will go forward with.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Well, thanks for that. I should mention that you have a Facebook page, and it's a pretty extensive Facebook page also.
Yes, we have the Facebook page, and that's really how we communicate. We're not going to come up with any other type of page at this time because, anyone who's interested in learning about the mob and where we're at in this process that we just described can tune in there, like the page, and you'll get all the information. And all of the mob has access to it, and so we're always, popping our own ideas and tidbits on there, any archive-type pictures or music or videos that we're interested in at the time. So it's very current, and we're very active on it. And from here on, this is the We Come to Crush Part 2 type situation, and that's where you can find out the information if you're interested.
All right. So my guest is Ralphie G of the Mob. And
can I add one more thing about this next set?
You can say whatever you want to. Please do.
The second song is my beautiful daughter Lily's favorite song, and her, like her dad, is a big fan of Johnny Thunders and the Ramones. So that's dedicated to Lily, and she's going to get to listen to Lise later. I think she's in school now, but she'll hear the replay, and she'll be excited to hear that song.
Very good. Okay. So we're off. Thank you, Ralphie G. And my guest today is Ralphie G of the Mob. Hello.
I just want to talk about the Ramones a little bit. That brings back so many memories, and I'm so proud that they, were the forefathers of representing Queens, music and so forth. And what could be better than them singing about Rockaway Beach and so forth? I was lucky enough to build a little bit of a relationship with them. And it all started way back when I was too young to get into the clubs and so forth. And Jose and I jumped on the train. We probably snuck on the train and went all the way out to Brooklyn to a club that a lot of people probably know, Zappa's. We had no idea where we were going and that sort of thing. But I wound up not bringing proper fake ID with me.
Proper
and,
fake ID.
Yeah. And Jose had his brother's ID and walked right in and didn't think twice about leaving me outside for one part of the story there. But it was the greatest thing. Me and this young girl were sitting out right outside the club, and we were, big frowns on our faces and that sort of thing. And the Ramones van pulled up, and we didn't believe me. We were just astonished that they were pulling up right in front of us. And they, did their little trot in the back room and so forth. And then Arturo Vega, who is their kind of main man and, confidant and that sort of thing, just came right around 5 minutes later and said, "What's up with you guys? Why are you sitting here?" I go, "We can't get in." We were crying and that sort of thing. And Arturo took us right around the same door that the Ramones went through. And we just happened to be backstage at Zappa's with the Ramones eating Chinese food and so forth. And then they said, "All right, right before the Ramones get in, run across the stage and jump right in front." And that was my first experience, not of seeing the Ramones, but my first experience of building a relationship with them. It wound up later on that they knew what was happening in the New York scene, obviously, and showed up at some shows and were real keen to, especially what some of the Queens bands were doing. And they, adapted a liking to us, especially Dee Dee Ramone, who would, come around every so often. And then we wound up, astonishingly enough, playing with them at very large venues and that sort of thing that we were totally unprepared for. But it was such an experience in, just having the honor of playing with them. So, that's a wonderful thing.
And what do you mean by being totally unprepared for playing with them?
Well, it was taking it. You had said, "Do you ever have dreams of playing the arena?" Well, these weren't arenas, but these were very large venues. Everything was, so by the Ramones, behind the scenes, were such a professional band. Everything was, to the time, to the T, to the price, whatever the case may be. They were very focused on what it is. They were a machine. And, we were a bunch of crazy nut, adolescents and so forth. And a little off the wall. So we never, did anything by the book. We did it mob style. And so that was a little different than the Ramon machine. So believe it or not, it was a bit of a conflict in the way we did things and the way they did things. But we saw something that we learned a lot from, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
So how many times did you open for the Ramones?
You know, I can't even tell you, but I would say it was at least 5 times.
Wow.
Yeah, and we got to travel a little bit with that. And they were all, very large venues, and it was great experience. And we got to do one of the very early Ramones shows at the Ritz at the time, and that was the first time we got to play there. It was just a great experience. And we got to do a little hanging with them backstage while, getting ready for these shows.
And what was the largest venue that the Mob ever played?
I would say it was a venue, what looked to be the largest venue was a place called the Wax Museum in Washington, D.C. with the Ramones. And that was a place where, some big acts, of all genres used to go to. Visually, that looked like the biggest venue. It felt like the biggest venue from the stage, but I don't really remember.
Also in that playlist was the New York Dolls. You sort of kicked off the Aerosmith. Why did you put the New York Dolls in your playlist?
Well, I love that song, and I love the Dolls, and Johnny Thunders is my musical hero. So, they got to be in there.
Say more about that.
Along with my experience at being lucky enough to experience the Ramones, and both musically and personally, I got to, experience the Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers thing. I missed the New York Dolls things, but was aware of it and really picked up on the Dolls based upon my fondness for Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers, which I saw numerous times at Max's Kansas City, which was kind of his home base, and put on the greatest shows on earth. And I truly loved it. So I never got to know Johnny, but I saw Johnny Thunders probably 10, 15 times, and every time better than the next. It was great. Mm-hmm. Better than the last, I should say.
And what do you have up next for us?
Well, we're going to start to kick up the velocity a little bit. We got some California stuff that was going on and very influential in my life and my musical tastes and so forth. And one of my favorite bands on earth is going to kick this off, the Dickies.
Do you have a story about the Dickies?
Well, I do. One time we were playing in Philadelphia, and this was kind of after a bit of a hiatus. I was living there, and my crew out there kind of wanted the Mob to come to town and play, and just so happened that we were gearing up to go into the studio to record on a Clash tribute record. We did Tommy Gunn for that record, and so we figured while we're at that, we might as well play a couple of shows, and we did. We played the Khyber. And about a week before we played the Khyber, we heard that the Dickies were playing a block away at Nick's Upstairs. And this was going to be going on simultaneously. And I don't think anyone in the music scene in Philadelphia wanted that to happen, or the two bands in particular. So we had a bit of a relationship with the Dickies. And so we saw them unloading their stuff. We got together, and we decided that, we'd move the crowd to the Khyber first, where the Mob would play, and then we'd all go over to Nick's Upstairs and enjoy the Dickies. And it was a great, night on 2nd Street in Old City, Philadelphia.
And was that, so you said that you knew them, though?
Well, I did not, but Jack Flanagan, the Mob guitarist, I believe was working a little bit with their management for a couple of years.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So we had an intimate, type relationship built into the band. I was a fan for years, though.
Very cool.
So I was I was actually a bit in awe that day.
Well, you get to play, and then they get to, they, it was they awesome. Wait for you.
They were watching, too.
That's awesome. And so what song were you hearing next?
We're going to hear Dickie's Curb Job.
That is off of the Incredible Shrinking Dickies. The copy that I have here is yellow vinyl.
Awesome.
And
I think mine's clear.
Very good. So my guest is Ralphie G from The Mob. Guest DJing, moving right along. Stay tuned, folks.
Hey, this next song is Black Flags, No Values. I want to dedicate it to my daughter, Erica, because in her teenage years and every once in a while, she feels her dad goes off the wall sometimes. Let's bust it. I don't care what you think. I don't care what you say.
And we have returned. Ralphie G of the Mob is my guest here today. And let's talk about what you just played for the listeners.
Yeah, that was a great set. We had the Dickies, Black Flag, and what else we have there?
Dead Kennedys.
Yes, let's lynch the landlord. Oh, man, one of the greatest hardcore shows I've ever witnessed in its velocity and violentness was the Dead Kennedys. I never thought I was going to leave there alive.
Which show was that?
The one in particular I'm thinking about was the one in Staten Island at the Paramount.
I was on that show.
Yeah, that was awesome. it was just something to be seen and to be experienced. But, I talked a little bit about my love for the Dickies and so forth, and Black Flag just off the charts, and to get back into the Dead Kennedys. Nice stuff. Hey, one of the things I wanted to talk about a little bit, because there's, last year I believe there was a concert, the A7 reunion, which I was very sorry we didn't get to do. But, there was a guy named Dave who ran A7, owned A7, I guess he leased A7, and, pretty much, just let things flow as they would. And it really gave us a home when no one else would. Of course, CBGB's caught on later that they can do something successful, picking up on the Sunday matinees and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But at A7 was really the home and the base for all that was going on that was, the transformation from the punk rock, the younger punk rock anyway, to the hardcore music that was current and going to progress at the time. But one of the greatest things, I remember the first time I played at A7, it was approximately 6 o'clock in the morning. And I thought it was the craziest thing. We were just starting out, and to wait around and to see, 10 bands go on one after the other, not having to bring your full gear and that sort of thing. And then playing at that time in this seedy little corner joint was something that, I think it fit into the Mob style, actually, after we experienced it the first time, because I would say we played there probably 25, 30 times over the course of its existence. But a lot of people don't, I never hear the Dave's name mentioned, and obviously it was Caddy Corner to 171A, which JW was running at the time, and he recorded a lot of those early, he started off with the Bad Brain Raucous set, and there was a lot of other bands that were happening at the time, but I know we recorded Upset the System there, and a lot of other bands like Reagan Youth and so forth were recording. So that little Caddy Corner there, really at Avenue A and 7th Street, was kind of the home base for a lot of things that was going on with Rat Cage Records underneath 171A, and then moving up the block later on.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that was the meeting place, and we could continue obviously all night long into the morning at A7, and I saw some of the greatest acts in that place, and that was one place that we can fulfill something which was kind of a goal of ours, which was to bring in other bands from other places and secure them a spot no matter what the case was in getting on a bill, that if you look back at some of those flyers, bills were some of the most intense hardcore bills that were ever assembled in New York.
Oh yeah,
which was, yeah, right? Yes. Yeah, I look back at those flyers and I'm like, wow.
And I do. Sorry, go ahead.
Go.
Well, and I do want to mention that just on your the Mob's Facebook page, you have a lot of old flyers on there.
We do, yeah. And I wish I had more. There's so many after seeing some of those, I kind of think about, and I'm like, wow, how come I don't have a copy of that? Yeah, if anyone out there has copies of some old A7 flyers, whether they're, Mob included or not, I'd love to see them, and I enjoy taking a look at that historical perspective that was going on there at the time, as well as the CBGB's matinees and so forth. But the A7 ones in particular, if you look at some of the lineups, they were just so awesome. And they always included out-of-town bands and bands from the different boroughs in New Jersey. It was really, really a way to, get things going and kind of interact with hardcore that was going in other places. And that, of course, what was the result of that is the bands from New York, after inviting some of the bands here, were able to go to Boston and to D.C. and to Connecticut and so forth, and expand out based upon the friendship that they solidified at playing at A7. Another thing that was interesting about A7 is that after a while, it kind of caught on as to what was going there, but we kind of you know, the groups and the bands that were playing and all the people that were hanging out kind of, you know, ran amok in there. And then all of a sudden you'd look in the corner and the Joe Jacksons and the, you know, some of the more prominent people would appear in the corner. And it was funny because they looked out of place there. I know they wanted to be part of it, but it was really cool to see some of the stars at the time try to pop in and be part of that underground scene.
Oh, sure. They heard of the scene. They were just checking it out to see what was going on.
Yeah, there was many times I saw Billy Idol sitting at the, you know, the end of the bar there and, you know, trying to be part of what was going on that he kind of left, you know, because I'm sure that's what he was used to in the early days in England.
Mm-hmm. I just want to ask you something off topic. What's the name of the Facebook, of the Mob's Facebook page?
The name of the Mob Facebook page is The Mob NYHC. You know, it's funny, the English punk, more punk-oriented, crass-type band, The Mob, came out around the same time we did.
Yep.
You know, we both are out there, and we've never made any communication between the two, but I always thought it would be a great show, maybe do a home and home. Right? We do it in New York, and we do it in England with the band, because I saw some videos of them playing recently. But we got to make some communication with them.
I'm surprised you never have.
I know. I am surprised, too. I think I reached out one time, and I was ignored. You know, it was
English. Well,
you
never know. You don't really know.
They're a little uppity over there.
So, what's the where we're heading for next on our...
Well, we're going to continue on the West Coast a little bit, and then we're going to bring it back east. Start off with favorites of mine, and I'm sure a lot of people out there.
The music speaks for itself.
It's going to be fast.
Okay. So, my guest is Ralphie G of The Mob, and he's been in some great tunes and schooling everybody and how it was. Please stay tuned.
I can see, can't you see?
Red tape!
Doing to you, doing to me.
Red tape!
Rothlessy and Bruce.
Red tape!
Killing you, killing me.
Jackson! Jackson! Jackson!
SOA, Bad Brains,
Circle Jerks.
So let's talk a little bit about those bands, Ralphie.
First I got to calm down. I feel like punching somebody after that or something crazy. Jumping off a stage or something. Wow.
That was
good. the Bad Brains. Obviously, we had a very, very, very close relationship with them early on. And it was wonderful. Obviously, that gave us the ability to team up with them a lot very early on. And I want to talk about the first show we ever played in Manhattan was at a club called the BC Club with the Bad Brains. And remember, we had seen them so many times and built a relationship with them, because when the Bad Brains first started, you know, they were growing their audience too, and they were picked up on by the punk scene in New York, and then obviously it progressed into much larger and larger crowds. And even in that early 79 video, you could see like three of the Mob members dancing around and pogoing in front and that sort of thing, so it's really cool. But to talk about and obviously we would hang with them, talk with them every time they came, and they, you know, were so nice in spending time with everyone that would come to see them, that they built a fan base that started out as their friends. And so we had lots of opportunity to talk and that sort of thing. But right away, they were also one of those bands that were helping other bands and giving them the opportunity to play as their audience progressed and got larger and larger. We were able to, join in with them. But the first show was at the BC Club, which was never really a club. It's what turned into Coney Island High later. And we had never played in Manhattan. We did a couple of shows, probably two shows in Queens with some of our Queens band friends like Heart Attack and The Influence and that sort of thing. But so we showed up for that show and we set up our equipment and so forth. And we're very novice in our approach. And, you know, the audience kind of was lukewarm and that sort of thing. But it was a large group that was there, and so we walked off a little disappointed in our performance, that sort of thing. And the thing I'll never forget is, in my appreciation of the Bad Brains, was they didn't have their equipment, which happened quite often, and so they used our equipment. So I kind of lost the excuse of it was the equipment, because they used, you know, our stuff and went on and did one of the most memorable shows I had ever seen in my life. And once again, it was just one of those learning things. And we were very young, so we still had total faith in what we were trying to accomplish. We were just new and experiencing new things at the time. But that led to a much, larger relationship. And we probably wound up playing with them, 20, 30 times going forward at CBGB's A7, Irving Plaza, and all over the place, but down in D.C. and that sort of thing. But I got to experience the Bad Brains at their peak so many times, and I can remember having conversations with HR in particular right before, you know, they were playing with the Dead Kennedys at Bond's Casino and with various other large bands, but you know that, and it was funny that one thing, I don't know if he was, you know, just talking or just being a human in a lot of ways, but he was always nervous and very afraid when he had those big shows to go up against, much like I guess I was in playing with the Ramones those early days. I mean, with the Bad Brains those early days. So those were quite great experiences. And as you know, we progressed, we felt just very comfortable. I'll never forget something that kind of disappeared was, and I thought that was very cool, is we used to do two sets each at CBGB's, and I know that went the by the wayside, but that, you know, refined the whole process and you know, made you just a better band, and having to get up once and then get up again and do it in between the other band doing their set twice. But the most important thing that came from that relationship, and what I think really made us a true cohesive working band later on, was that we were given advice by HR in particular, and he came out to the rehearsal studio many times. But he was like, "Get in the studio every day." And you know, that's difficult for us today, but
wow,
back then as kids, yeah, it was something that we were able to do because we had our own rehearsal space, and I don't know, some bands don't even have that, but we did, and so we played every day, wow. And it just made the difference. You know, it became more of a feel than a task. And I think that, you know, really turned us into being afraid to attack it, to, you know, attacking it in a way that was, you know, dominant in some aspects.
Wow. That's some pretty great advice there from
Yeah. Wow. I tell bands the same thing now, and I act like it's from me.
Now you know.
Gotta get in there every day. Listen to Robbie J.
There you go. And... Awesome. Wow.
We played some other good stuff there too, huh? SOA, that's Henry Rollins' first band, who I, you know, loved. And that green vinyl, was it 8 or 9 songs? That really was the model for Upset the System. After I saw that and heard that, I said, okay, we're going to do something just like this.
and the only thing that I have to say about that is that all the Discord records from back then have fallen apart. Like the glue that they use in Upset the System is still...
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forgot what type of glue we used.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, and the thing, and like, and I have all the old Touch and Go stuff too, and the Touch and Go stuff has remained intact, but all the Discord stuff has not. So whatever glue they were using there in D.C. did not make the grade.
It's funny because I haven't seen Ian in years, but one of the last conversations I had was us laughing about the first couple of singles and how we had to cut and glue and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It becomes like a family.
I didn't ask him what type of glue he used, though. Next time I will.
It's a good thing you didn't ask him.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, so...
Well, especially since you exposed him now.
Whatever was on sale, I don't know. It's not good or bad. You don't know how it's going to turn out.
True.
So moving right along, Ralphie G, what do we have up next?
Well, we're going to stay in D.C. For a little lesser-known band, but a band that we brought down a couple of times to play with us at A7, and we may have done a CB show with them, and they obliged, and we did some Wilson Center stuff with them, and they're called Artificial Peace, and they were just one of my favorites at the time. Then we're going to move into some New York early stuff.
Yeah, they did play at A7.
Yes.
And we're going to... I've got to...
I remember that. I think we also did something together at CBGB's.
The flyer accompanying the next song is from the Mob Facebook page, and it's an A7 flyer with both the mentioned bands, Artificial Peace and the Mob.
Cool. What they need to do is do a re-release of Artificial Peace, you know, full length. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, that would be. Well, we'll see if we can get their people to get in touch with your people and get the ideas going. All right, folks, please stay tuned. Some Artificial Peace next. I'm looking in, not part of a scene. Halfway in, halfway out, caught in between. Where I dress and where I act, can't lose the crowd. And I won't feel a summer because I'm allowed. I'm hooked on looking at done, reaching for society. And I'm just surprised if they can accept me. Don't worry, doing your best. At the worst, when the time, look in the rest. Cut your hair, shave your head, can't please them all. If I can't please everyone, I will try it all. I was on looking at some student society, and I won't get surrounded if they can accept me. Just as worried, just a way of doing our best. Half the world's by their time, looking like the rest. Cut your hair, shave your head, can't please them all. If I can't please everyone, I will try it all. I'm a dog looking inside a museum of society, and I won't get surrounded if they can accept me.
Begging you, say go. We are begging you, begging you, say go.
And my guest in the studio is Ralphie G of The Mob. Hello, sir.
Hey.
And let's go over what we just heard.
Well, what's interesting about that last song that you just heard was that was ZDF from the Truth Over the Airwaves CD, which we put out in 98. Kind of a comeback to ZDF Records. Go ahead.
That was recorded here.
Yes.
It was recorded in our old building, WFMU, in 1987.
Yes, and I didn't even know that. But
I knew
now
that.
I do.
Indeed.
So we have that works mm-hmm. nicely. Mm-hmm. But one thing about this is you had mentioned the Facebook site, and of course there's a link out to indie merch there, and these are available rather inexpensively. So if anyone's interested in some of that live stuff that we did on the radio, which is 20 songs in length, everything from Instant Success to ZDF, 101, New Metal, everything's on there. And we were really peaking as far as the sound was concerned and the brotherhood that was going on. So you can get yourself a copy of that by just going to the Facebook site.
Very good. And before ZDF, we heard from Urban Waste.
Nice. Urban Waste is active, and it's kind of the mob's got to join this party. Antidote, Urban Waste, Reagan Youth, they're all active. I was in Wilmington, Delaware about 4 months ago, and a friend of mine goes, we were sitting in a bar having a couple of beers and so forth. He goes, Reagan Youth is playing tonight here. I was like, well, then what are we doing sitting here? And we got to see Reagan Youth, and it was awesome. Yeah, the mob has to join this party. Everybody's playing again and having fun, and I've seen quite a few of the bands as they travel through, and they're better than ever. So, we're gonna hook up with some of these other bands that from our time that are gigging again.
And the last three songs were accompanied by, except for ZDF, were accompanied by flyers that are off of the mob's Facebook.
How about that Reagan Youth song? This is the first time I ever heard the Reagan Youth song with the headset.
Oh.
And man, that bass line is awesome. I had never really heard it that way. And they rock on that song. Awesome.
And so what are we going to hear next?
We are going to hear a little Antidote and then some Stimulators. We're going to go back even further than mob style.
Stay tuned. All right, Ralphie G, we're back. Rounding out today's show.
Wow.
We got a comment from one of the listeners that just says, Little Harley Flanagan. What do you make of that?
Ah, I was thinking the same thing. The Stimulators, Loud Fast Rules, they were mob style before there was mob style. What a great title and great song. I hadn't heard that in ages. But yes, whoever that listener is knows that Harley was, I don't know how old he was when he was drumming with them, with the two ladies and the gentleman who sang for them. I forget their names right now, but they were awesome.
Denise is his aunt, I believe.
One of the players?
Yeah.
I met them a couple times. Yeah, nice people and all that. I love that single, though. They were way ahead of their time. And actually, they played with the Mad and the Bad Brains before, hardcore even was, a sperm. Can I say that?
You just did.
I did. So that was awesome. Hey, I was just thinking, you know, as a guest and having 1 minute songs, I think I get a lot more mob songs in than your normal guest, huh?
Yes. Yes, you've worked it quite well.
So. Uh-huh. Yeah, we got to keep making those 1 minute songs. I think we've gone away from that. I think we're up to about a minute and 45 now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, ZDF was 3 minutes.
It was, because yeah. Jackie was blasting away and, you know, leading the troops.
And then we started off that set with Antidote.
Antidote, yes. That was their first 45, which is a wonderful 45, and they've continued on to do some great music. And they're very active today, and I'm hoping for a mob Antidote bill sometime in the future.
Well, I'm sure that you're going to make that happen.
Try, yeah.
And I want to mention that you guys are doing the Twitter thing.
We are. They can follow us on Twitter, where we will be updating on how our project's progressing, how the new songs are coming along, anything we start to plan as far as playing out, and also just some thoughts and you know, ideas we might have. A lot going on in the world today, and we're kind of a couple of opinionated individuals in the mob.
So to follow the mob on Twitter, it's TheMob101.
Yes, it is.
Correct. And then the Facebook is TheMobNYHC.
You got it.
Just so all the listeners have their facts straight, because we are getting near the end of the program.
Great. Well, you know, most people don't talk these days. They talk through Twitter and Facebook, right?
Right, exactly.
Not my generation, but hey, I adapted quick.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta, you know, I gotta talk to my teenage daughter sometime.
Right. Exactly. And what's the next song we're gonna play?
The next song is by another New York favorite called Murphy's Law, and I believe it is What Will the Neighbors Think?
Ralphie G of the Mob is my guest today, and I'm gonna get right to some Murphy's Law. Stay tuned.
Hey!
Let's talk about what you just heard.
Well,
or what you just played and what
yes.
The listeners just heard.
Well, and the Westerberg, you know, after blasting away at the velocity we were there for all that time, I had to bring it down. Yes, the Paul Westerberg Mannequin Shop was my choice also. Big fan of the Replacements and his latest solo work, so I figured we'd try to ease it down just a little bit to close it out. Hey, that time went fast. You know, playing great music and so forth, and there's so much I could have added to that list, but maybe you'll have to have me back sometime so I could concentrate maybe we'll do a New York show or something, just cut out the West Coast and the D.C. and all mm-hmm. that type of thing and just concentrate on right here in the Apple, right?
Yeah, we could do that. And a listener wants to know if you are if you follow the current hardcore scene at all.
Well, I do, and usually it's by accident that I follow it, in that I don't know a lot of what's going on, but I show up at shows and festivals and things like that, and by accident I catch on to something new that I love, and by going to see maybe, you know, some of the bands that were playing, you know, with me and then have gone on to afterwards and so forth. So yes, I do. If you ask me, you know, which act do you like that's came out over the last 2 years and so forth, I probably can't even say the name, but there's you know, some music out there that I'm really liking, and I do follow it, but it's almost by accident right now.
Very good. You know, and I just want to thank you for making the effort, being here. Ralph is one of the few guests who came here live. It always makes for an interesting day. And there's a lot of preparation involved in doing the show, you know. And for you guys, the Mob Facebook page especially is very well equipped. And I got to put up a lot of flyers and stuff. And it is a lot of work to program this much music, so thank you. And then
my pleasure. And to everybody out there that tuned in, thank you. You know, look for us, because we're definitely going to be out there in the fields once again.
So on Twitter, it's The Mob 101. On Facebook, it's The Mob NYHC. And that wraps it up for today's podcast. Thank you to Lita Martinez for editing the podcast, and to Liz Berg for all the other background work. We are WFMU.